Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How should you sell stuff from your farm? How do you measure employee engagement? And should you quit your job if your boss wants you to do something illegal? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. I'm going to answer those listener questions in just a minute. But first, welcome to the LeadX Weekly Wrap-Up Show. This is where we get to take our time. We get to rant about personal stuff. And of course, I get to answer your questions. But first, I want to welcome Tara Millette, like Gillette, but with an M instead of a G, she says.
Perfect. Hey, Tara. Yes. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. And all of our listeners are like, what the heck? Did I tune into the wrong show? Who the heck is Tara Millette? So who are you?
I am the editor of LeadX. So I help curate the website that a lot of our visitors get to go see some amazing advice on. I am responsible for the daily newsletter. So anyone who's a subscriber, you get awesome advice. That's me kind of translating some of those interviews into great little wisdom nuggets for you. And I write the occasional article that's hopefully helpful to a few people. And that's pretty much it. I'm usually in the background though. So it's really cool to be, I'm in the weekly wrap up. Like usually I'm editing the transcript right now. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to have you on. And I think, you know, LeadX listeners, for a lot of you, you might not realize that we have the LeadX podcast show, but then when you go to leadx.org, there's now hundreds of articles, not just from us, not just the podcast interviews, but from all kinds of writers. And I even peeked this morning, and David Dye, who's a rock star, has a piece about how to lead your peers, like when you get promoted and now you're the boss of your friends. I get asked about that all the time, and David is a great writer. Like he opens up right in the story. So you got to go check out David Dye's piece. Ken Byler's got stuff on, David Holzner on disruption. There's a bunch of stuff is my point. And so make sure you go to leadx.org to check out all this stuff. And this is Tara's great editing work and recruiting writers helping them to put out their best work. And LeadX listeners, you'll know we like to experiment. I'm always asking you, how can we take the show to the next level? And, last week we experimented I recorded the weekly wrap up and I broadcast it on Facebook Live. We're doing that again, sort of this week. We're struggling with Be Live TV, but we think it's good. And we're broadcasting on video right now. And if you in the future want to watch us live and or submit questions and stuff through Facebook, just go on to Facebook and you can look up LeadX Life and follow that page and sign up for notifications and then follow my page, which is Cruz Author. And today we're just broadcasting from Cruz Author until I can remember to share it onto the other page. So Tara, before we dive in again, welcome. Anything you're hoping to, get out of the show now that you're a part of it, now that you're co-hosting it?
No, it's great, because I spend so much of my time looking over all the interviews in a transcript format for the most part. And, I get to read them and kind of cut them down so people can get them a little more concisely. So I'm getting all these great, pieces of advice and stuff, but I don't get to talk about them to probably anyone except maybe my boyfriend, who's very tired of hearing about all my productivity tips and leadership tips for him. So it's going to be really cool to just hash out some of the cool ideas of the week and be able to talk to people about it and hopefully answer some questions. So I'm super excited. It's going to be really fun.
And I'm with you on all those reasons. I mean, in the spirit of, again, trying to make the show better, it's hard for any one person to talk into a microphone and not have an audience. So I think, Tara, you're going to make this a better experience for me too. We also get to benefit from your wisdom. We joke in the office that I represent the old people. You represent the millennials. So we got that covered.
Oh yeah. Covering our grounds. We're really getting everyone, I think, under this umbrella we got.
That's right. So this week we've got three reader questions, but before we get to those, we always like to do the iTunes review of the week. So Tara, what do we got this week?
We've got a great one this week. This is from Nathaniel Hippoff. And Nathaniel, feel free to send me as much hate mail about how I butchered your name just there. But let's get started with what he said. He said, just wanted to say your podcast has been the most helpful business podcast I've listened to yet. It's efficient, punchy, and robust. So it's great listening to you on my drive to work. As a newcomer to the business world, I appreciate that your podcast reaches the new guy and the experienced agent as well. You've mentored me through your podcast and the people you've had on the show. That is awesome, Nathaniel. And you are getting a LeadX t-shirt sent your way, whether you like it or not. It is coming. We appreciate it. And it's great that he mentioned that it reaches the new guy and experienced agents, because I think that's kind of what we're aiming for, right? We want new people and new leadership roles to feel good. So that's excellent. I just want to remind everyone too, if you subscribe and leave a review on iTunes, not only may we select it and send you an awesome LeadX t-shirt or perhaps a mug, which seems to be very popular right now, but we'll also add you to the LeadX Ambassador group on Facebook, which has lots of really great tidbits and goodies. So yeah, review away, people. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think it's funny that the commenters on Facebook are commenting on the snazzy mug instead of my lower thirds blocking my t-shirt. The problem, everyone, is these are much harder to ship in the mail.
Yeah, that's true. You may get just shards.
Doesn't mean you won't try, but
LeadX hates me. It's trying to cut me up with these porcelain shards.
They'll think it's like a puzzle or a game. You know, we did it on purpose. Build your own LeadX mug.
We can sell it that way, right? You know?
So also, not only can people join our ambassador group, of course, and I really want to ramp that up. We've been so busy that we haven't been throwing enough love at that group. We're going to fix that soon.
Yeah.
But everybody can download our new ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership at leadx.org/Branson. And just to throw a little color on that. So I'm always looking for ways to add value, to do, you know, free downloads and everything. And I, like everyone, am fascinated by Richard Branson. I mean, you know, I want to be Branson. Who doesn't want to have that crazy success and lifestyle?
Yeah.
So most of what people write about with Branson that I see is all about entrepreneurial success. How do you start a business or marketing? And, you know, I was curious about how he leads people, and especially when he's got 100 companies and they're all remote because he's partying on his island and everything. So I read all of Richard Branson's books. I read every article and interview I could find with him over the last several years, and specifically looking for, you know, how is he managing people? How is he motivating people? How does he manage remotely? Anything I could find, and then condensed it all down, of course, because we are all so busy, into like the 7 tips, the 7 secrets. And then I hired Dave Lachlan, who's my favorite graphic designer, and threw a bunch of money his way. So this isn't just like some ugly black and white Word document that Kevin Cruz put together. It's even beautifully laid out, you know, so it's free. You just got to drop your email in and you'll get that PDF. I encourage everybody to get it. leadx.org/Branson. So Tara, are we ready for questions?
Oh yeah, sure I am. All right. Let's see who we got here. I have a question from Athena. Very beautiful name. It says, I own a small hobby farm and am pursuing expansion into selling the items we produce, like wool, chicken, and lamb meat. I have a good customer base for the meat. However, the wool has put me in a time-consuming problem. What is the best way to market my product? Craigslist and other simple online selling methods are not biting. I have wool duvets and lamb skins. What are some marketing resources you would recommend for startup entrepreneurs? That's, I have to say, Athena, when the apocalypse comes, I want to be on your team because you sound like you can handle yourself. Kevin and I are just going to end up being traveling bards and Athena will rule. So yeah, Kevin, what do you think? What should you do for some marketing resources?
Well, here? Tara, first help me out. So I'm a 50-year-old guy. What's a wool duvet?
Okay. That I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb here and just say it's like a regular duvet cover, but probably made from wool.
I think I always confuse duvets with divots. Aren't divots like what you put your thing on or something?
Yeah, I'm not.
So one's big and the other
blanket.
Small.
Yeah, the big fluffy blankets that you have on your bed. That's a duvet.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Cool. So obviously, I don't know anything about chicken and lamb meat, or obviously duvets or other things. But The good news is the framework to sell your stuff, to market your stuff, especially business to consumer, is sort of the same no matter what you do. And I'm laughing, Tara, because one of the people who's commenting, I know, is live right now on Facebook, is my sister. Oh. She does live on a farm, and she has chickens, and she sells chicken eggs. So we can hit her up on the zombie apocalypse too.
But, perfect.
So she might have suggestions she can feed me about how to sell wool duvets and things. But I digress. So, okay, Athena, here's the thing. What you have to do, really, no matter what your product is you need to figure out, so where do your people hang out? Where does your tribe hang out? So people who would be interested in your products, in wool products and duvets, et cetera, you know, who are they and where do they hang out, like, online? Now, are they hanging out on Craigslist? I mean, maybe there's people who are local and watching the for sale classifieds or whatever. So you might stumble on some people there. But I would say, where else might you find these people? And it can be either niche areas. So, I mean, I have no idea. Maybe there's wool lovers groups on Facebook. Maybe there's farm product consumers, like, I, you know, online, you know, markets and things. I don't really know that space. The other thing to think about, if you're selling anything B2C, no matter how niche, is don't forget about the biggest marketplaces, which is Amazon.com. eBay, Tara, I know, has mentioned in the past, Etsy is great for, you know, products that are personally made. So you need to kind of look around and find out where is your tribe hanging out. And if you can find online where people who are into crafts and you know, farm goods and other things like that hang out, you want to build a relationship over time. So you can always run an ad and, you know, advertise your product, get a sale, and that's good. That's very transactional. But to build your, you want that repeat business. You want that word of mouth. You want to build that relationship. And so they talk about, over time, people need to know you, like you, and trust you. And they can't buy from you if they don't know you exist. So you need to participate in those online communities. You need to put your product for sale where it can be found when they type in duvets in the search engine. They need to like you. So that's, you know, sharing some of your personal story, your brand, tell people about your farm, help other people, you know, who might have questions about these kinds of things. And then over time, you know, they will begin to trust you. They'll know you're a real person, not a cold-hearted company. You're going to put up testimonials and you'll get those ratings and reviews, so people don't think you're going to, you know, steal their money in some kind of con. But once they know you, like you, and then trust you, you'll start to see those sales happening. And I think the final part of the framework I would add is, a lot of people just do that sell, 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 sell. And it's transactional. It can work if you have a hot product in a big market. In niche markets and things, it's more about adding value over and over again, and then every now and then asking for the sale or reminding them that you literally have a one-time sale or only 3 pieces left this month or whatever it might be, you know, some scarcity as well. So Athena, kind of a long answer, but hopefully you can see that. Find where your tribe hangs out, whether it's the big Amazons or Etsy's or wherever, you know, try to connect with them, try to add value, and, you know, build that relationship over time. How's all that sound, Tara?
Sounds great. I mean, so you're saying that, you know, you do your research for your kind of ideal customer. And then sometimes it's just about time spent in whatever platform they hang out in, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. It's patience. And I don't have a lot of it. Tara probably could tell stories about this. Like, I want us to have the number one podcast in the world, like, already. And we've only been doing this for a few months. So I don't have a lot of patience myself, but I like to preach it. You know, it does take some time. You can't just put up an ad. We didn't sell anything today, so the ad comes down. It does take some time to make those impressions and to build up that trust.
That's awesome. Go with Athena. Are we ready for the next question?
Sure.
Great. Let's go with Michael. He had a question here. I work for the FAA Aircraft Certification Service on the East Coast. Our organization has just reorganized into functional divisions. What are some ways to measure employee engagement in a government agency like ours, particularly since we are dispersed throughout the country? That is super interesting. How do you do that?
Right. So employee engagement, I mean, a lot of people will talk about employee happiness or employee motivation. Engagement's a little bit different, but it's basically, you know, our, it's an emotion, how we feel about our work. Do we feel connected to our employer? Do we want to support their goals? It feels like our company, not their company. So it gets to this issue of, you know, how can we measure this feeling that's inside of us? You know, if we say, we all know that, you know, love is an emotion that we all want to have, but there's no love-o-meter that can like say, oh, Tara's, you know, in love with her boyfriend on a scale of 7 out of 10. You know, we don't have that x-ray or whatever.
Sounds about right.
Now I'm going to have to then, there'll have to be a follow-up B-roll show on, okay, how do you get your relationship above a 7? Anyway, so how do you get to that? Well, basically you need to survey your employees. So it's employee surveys that can get at this feeling of engagement. And the survey researchers will design questions. They call them proxy questions because there's no exact way to, you know, measure that emotion. But back to the love example, if, you know, if I'm madly in love with my wife, I probably would recommend that other people get married, and I don't think about straying or cheating on my wife. Well, you can take similar questions for employees. If you love your job, if you have high engagement, you would tell everybody, your friends and family members, this is a great place to work. There's a job opening. You should come and apply. And I wouldn't think about straying. I wouldn't think about interviewing for other jobs. So employee researchers will use survey questions that will say, like, in the last 6 months, you've actively thought about looking for a job. Strongly agree, strongly disagree. You would recommend your workplace to your friends and family members. Strongly agree, strongly disagree. And because these are usually online surveys, you can do them over the phone or kiosk or whatever, but most of them are online now. Remote workforces, it's fine. You know, people will just log in. Generally, you ask them, you know, what's your location or what division do you work in? They should be anonymous. Ideally, you say who's your boss, who's your manager, and then they get asked these series of questions. Now, if you're a big company and you've got a lot of locations, maybe you're all over the world, you need to go out and hire, you know, one of the big survey research companies like IBM Connexa, Gallup, Towers Watson is another one. There's a lot of big companies that will do these projects. If you're a mid-size company, you know, 50, 100, 250 employees, I think if you go to the Society of Human Resource Management, SHRM, I think it's SHRM.org or something like that, they offer some employee engagement survey services. Sometimes your local HR chapter, SHRM chapters will offer it. And I think if you just go to surveymonkey.com and get a free account, they have some basic employee satisfaction surveys and questions. Not quite the same as engagement, but pretty close. And then if you're in a really small business, and that's not the case of our friend Michael from the FAA, but if you've got a small business, you can still, you know, go on to SurveyMonkey. You can use the questions. I didn't mean to make this a book plug, but Employee Engagement 2.0 is my book that gives 10 questions that you have the rights to use. So you can search for them online or buy this little book, and it gives you questions you can use yourself. The downside to doing surveys yourself is that your employees might not trust that it's truly going to be anonymous. And if they don't think it's confidential and anonymous, they might not grade you honestly. And Tara, on this note, we actually got a question in on Facebook. This is perfect timing. Ozma, appreciate this. How important is anonymity when you're doing engagement surveys? Not sure if this is a bad question for this podcast. There are no bad questions for this podcast.
Right? I ask some of the dumbest questions at work. It's
an AMA, and ask me anything. So to elaborate on this, that's the issue. The anonymity is important. And you can actually tell a lot about engagement in a company by how many people even complete the survey. Because if you get less than 50% of your employees even submitting it, it's a sign of lower engagement, because either one, they don't even care enough to answer your survey, or they don't trust that it's anonymous. They think you're going to, it's a low trust environment. They think they're going to tag the answers back. And Tara, it's a shame, but this is a true story. The company I worked for, or I had a partner in just over 10 years ago. The CEO, so I was running one of the seven divisions, and the CEO sends out this company survey, give us your feedback because things weren't going real well. You know, it's all going to be anonymous, blah, blah, blah. And so people grade the company, answer the questions, and they put in their comments. And then like the week later, I'm in the CEO's office and his IT director sitting in the chair there. And he makes some comment. Oh, he's like, hey, Kevin, did you see the comments from some people on your team? And it was like one person on my team was like trashing the overall company and not trying to exclude myself, but it was sort of like comments on the whole thing. And the CEO says to his IT guy, hey, is there any way we could find out? I think I know who that is. And he was trying to guess who made the comment and asked his IT guy. And thankfully, no. The IT guy's like, no, you can't do that. And but I was like, do people really do that? So people who, and this is horrible because this is exactly the reason why people don't answer surveys. They're afraid there's going to be some way to do it. So whenever possible, you use an outside survey company. That way they're not going to, you know, have any shenanigans. If your HR department's running their own survey, you got to kind of wonder sometimes. I mean, it's a shame, but you sort of have to. So anonymity is very important.
I definitely, I had the last place I worked at, which was a few years ago now, but I had a similar experience where it was like a 6-month review, but we did these surveys, but we surveyed the manager and he surveyed us. And then we got together and discussed them together.
Ooh, awkward.
It was kind of, I remember just feeling like, well, I can't really say the things that I need to say. I didn't really understand the process at all. I mean, they didn't even have an HR, so that's a whole other problem in and of itself. But yeah, it's incredibly important. I would feel way safer if I knew that I could really just say what I needed to say. And that's what makes a company better.
Yeah, you need trust for that.
You don't want to punish someone for being honest, but...
Anyway, enough on engagement. I went crazy because that's like my hot button issue. But what else we got?
All right, let's move on. This one is anonymous. And this question says, let's say, hypothetically, your boss asked you to do something illegal twice. Both times you declined. And on the second time, you were pretty clear that you won't do it. Then the boss shouted, literally. So after that, he never talked about it again. Would you look for another job?
Tara, I can't believe you put your own question in this show.
I know. It's anonymous, though. And they're speaking anonymity,
I'm
right?
I'm just kidding. yeah, so this is, speaking of anonymous, right? So this is a doozy. So here's a short answer and then a longer answer. The short answer is I always say, you know, life is too short to be unhappy at work for any reason. So personally, I'm not going to work for somebody who's a screamer, whether they're screaming at me or just, you know, yelling all the time. I don't want to be in that environment. You know, move on. So much of our emotions at work transfer into our personal lives and vice versa. It's just, you think about how many hours you're spending every day at work. Why would you want to work in this kind of environment? So in general, I say you got to make the move. However, having said that, I would say like, make sure, like, no matter what's going on, I always say, I always look at myself first. Did I do something wrong? Am I interpreting things wrongly? You know, do I have it right? Am I being objective? So when you say the boss is asked to do something illegal, I mean, if the boss is like, hey, you know, go rob this bank for me. Well, yeah, that's illegal. And that should get reported and or at least you quit. But if the boss is like, hey, you know, you're being paid to do this work stuff, but I've got this charity that I'm doing this weekend. Do you mind sorting these envelopes for the charity for me for an hour? Is it illegal to ask you to do something and all that? Maybe, but is it a gray area? And is there any harm? So just do a gut check. Like, is it really illegal or is it just something you're not comfortable with that's in the gray zone? And even if, no matter how awful your boss is or whatever's going on, until you improve your situation, you know, don't let that person rent space in your head. You can even take a negative situation and say, okay, I'm going to use this experience to practice patience, to practice understanding. As hard as it is, I'm going to say, all right, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I. Whatever's going on in that person's life, maybe there's a reason why they're acting this way. Maybe there's a reason why they're so stressed out. You know, give them the benefit of the doubt. And then finally, I say, you know, you always want to run to something, not from something. because the old, boy, I'm using these quips, like the devil you know versus the devil you know you don't know. So you leave this one bad boss who's screaming and asking you to do something illegal. Are you going to rush into another job that's even worse in some way? Mm-hmm. So I would say, and again, like I have low tolerance for BS at work and everything. So look, if this is a bad situation, yeah, try to get out of it, but don't rush out of it. Like just say, okay, I can handle this and grow, use it as a growth and learning experience. Now let me find, you know, a great place to go. Let me get ready, whether that's getting your LinkedIn profile set up, spreading the word quietly, mm-hmm. you know, interviewing a lot of places. Just don't make any rash decisions.
Right. And just to your point a bit, you do have to do a gut check when it comes to those gray areas. If it's something as small as, you know, doing an hour of envelope stuffing for a charity and it's not technically your job, so it's not technically legal, but it's not a big deal. But at the same time, it seems like this person did set a boundary and said, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. And the fact that the boss came back and even shouted, that's the only reason why I'm like, I think it's time to maybe look, like you said, passively, slowly, just kind of make sure you have all your ducks in a row. But you set a boundary with someone and then they tried to, again, push back. I think that the point being your boss made you uncomfortable. You made them aware of that and they continued anyway. That's a problem in and of itself. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's right. That's right. When they came back again.
Yeah.
Hey, I know we did the three questions that were submitted previously, but Tara, I'm gonna take another one here from our Facebook audience, which is fun. That's the whole point of this. So, Susan, thank you for this question. It's nice to see on the Facebook feed here. How do you maintain productivity and positive energy in your job during highly uncertain times? Mm. Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of ways that this could go in, Susan, without knowing the specifics. And again, on one level, when it comes to like engagement at work, which is a little different than productivity, but engagement will drive productivity, and energy correlates to engagement. You know, when things are uncertain, it's tough because the top three drivers of employee engagement are growth, recognition, and trust. We want to know that we're growing and we have a bright future. We want recognition from our boss and peers, you know, like that we're doing a good job. And then, you know, trust isn't just the ethics. It's that future confidence, that future certainty that, hey, the organization's got a bright future. I've got a bright future in the organization. So during highly uncertain times, that trust in the future dial gets turned way down. You know, what's going to happen in the future here? Is the company going to be in business? Are they going to do layoffs or what's going on in my department? So one of those three engagement drivers has been turned down. One thing you can do as an individual, and if you're someone's manager, if you're someone's leader during tough times, you can help your team members with this, is, you know, try to look for opportunities to grow and develop. Hey, I don't know if I'm going to be here in 6 months or 12 months, whether because I want to leave or I'm going to get downsized or whatever it is, but I'm going to try to learn as much as possible. I'm going to try to grow. I'm going to try to, you know, advance in this way. I think when it comes to the kind of positive attitude and energy, it's harder because it, you know, it can get beaten out of you. But for myself, I try to go back to like my ultimate mission, purpose, values. You know, for myself, it's all about trying to provide hope and help to people who are trying to reach their full potential. So I do that no matter what the environment is. Our episode 100 podcast was an interview with Captain Sully Sullenberger, the guy who landed his plane in the Hudson River. And he didn't get into it as much as I wanted him to, because I read about his answer to this in the book. But he said when he was with the airline during that time, it was during all those cutbacks, people were getting fired and demoted and not a good time to be there. And he said most of his colleagues would just get so tired of, you know, the situation at hand that they would give up, and the customer service would fall down. They would do the minimal to get by. You know, they just lost hope. And so I asked, well, how do you stay with it? And he said, you know, it was personal to him. He wanted to help other people. It's a people-to-people thing. So despite the environment, despite the company around him, he would do what he would do to show up and lead every day, to have a, you know, positive influence on those around him. And that's what I try to remind myself. I mean, whether we're always leading, we're always influencing others, we're just leading in a positive direction or a negative direction. If I show up at work and I'm upbeat and happy, Tara's a little more likely to, you know, smile, give me a thumbs up. If I'm grumping and arguing and yelling at people, she's, you know, and everyone else is going to be a little bit down. So it's a tough situation, but I just try to say, all right, environment, I can't control. Let me be wise and say, I can't control all those things. What can I control? And try to, you know, come up from there. What do you think, Tara?
You know, it's interesting because I've definitely had it in the past where there were uncertain times. And I remember, you know, a supervisor, one in particular, would kind of keep us in the dark on stuff that was happening in the company, I think in an effort to shield us from the negativity.
Yeah.
And looking back on it, it might sound counterproductive, but I do feel like having a fairly honest and transparent discussion with your team, like, hey, this is where the company is. And yeah, it looks like this might happen. But here's what, you know, we're going to do to make sure that we just keep going at the best that we can, would have done so much more for me in that situation than kind of being blindsided at some points, being like, oh, wow, okay, so that's just gone now? Cool, I had no idea. And so I would just urge you to, if you can, be as transparent as you can with your team, because first of all, they can tell when stuff's going on and you're not telling them. And that lowers that trust bar, right? And second, they feel like they can talk to you. They feel like, okay, well, at the very least, I can rely on that person. It does help a lot with morale, at least from what I went through. So
yeah, I always say those. And there's a lot of leaders out there who will say, you know, hide the bad stuff from your people because they can't handle the truth, kind of thing. And I always say, if you don't tell them exactly what's going on, whatever they imagine is going to be worse.
Oh yeah. Totally. I was like, we're imploding. It's all over. Right. Like, you know, I went, you know, hysterics in my head. So definitely honesty is the better way to go. Even if it's not great news, you kind of have to just share it frankly. But you also mentioned like making sure that you emphasize growth, you know, with your team right. on certain times. Do you think the onus is on leaders to kind of come to their team and say, hey, here's an opportunity we can all learn, or do you think like bring courses in online or stuff like that, or just,
well, I think it's both. And this is hard to do, but like I've actually seen situations where large companies are going out of business, different retail chains. So let's say a chain of electronic stores, they're going out of business. It's announced everyone's going to be losing their job. So what happens to engagement and energy and productivity? It drops because, oh my God, we're going to be all gone in 4 months.
Yeah.
Yet there will be pockets of stores where engagement is still high, maybe not sky high, but it's still high. What's the difference? It's a manager in those locations that somehow said, all right, not going to lie, not going to hide the bad news. This stinks. We will all be out of here in 4 months. And here's what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask that you give it your all till your very last day. And I'm going to promise I will let you know everything that I hear. So you're going to know what's going to go on. I'm going to promise you that when we're out of here, I'm going to help you to find your next job. You can use my network. I'm going to give you a great letter of recommendation. And between now and then, let's learn from this. You know, let's, you know, people are going to quit and we're going to be wearing two hats. And those of us that are going to stay, we're probably going to get stay bonuses and some promotions. And even though I can't do that, you know, you only stock shelves in the back, well, you're going to be working the cash register that last week.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, it's hard to do, but to try to rally people around, hey, let's make the most of this. Let's learn through these hard times. And it might not be something you can put on a resume, but I mean, if some manager, if I was hiring team leaders and was interviewing a bunch of people and they were all kind of similar and one had led through a very difficult time, I mean, that's some war wounds, some battle scars that are valuable. I mean, I think that's a great experience to have gone through. So, you know, they're those managers who can show the upside in a bad situation will get more from their people, will get more engagement.
That's excellent. I never thought of that, but it's so true. Going through that probably makes you a lot tougher as a manager.
Yeah. So. And I just want to add, again, this is a comment that's coming in off Facebook. Facebook, I can't even say that, FB. Frode Hyman says, oh, it's at the hard times I thrive. That's when you get challenged and learn. It's when it's safe that I get bored. So I see that's a great attitude. And that's a growth mindset. That's the learner mindset. And it triggered a memory. God, I was 22 years old and whole nother story, like temping for 3 or 4 months in this pharma company, and the business unit leader, when things would go bad and people would have to stay late or come in on the weekend, it's a little cheesy looking back, but he would write all these signs and markers. His phrase was, "This is another opportunity to show excellence, another opportunity to show excellence." And he, you know, pass them up and around. And, you know, he got a reputation in that group for, you know, high performance, even in tough times. And several of us got reputations for being able to deliver in the tough times. So yeah, I get bored when things are too easy also.
Wow. So. Yeah. That's so true. You do get better with that stuff because you can't really learn that from a book, right? You kind of have to go through that.
You got to live it. So Anyway, hey, Tara, we have got to wrap this show up because we go long, but we don't want to go too long. And I'm going to say, even though this was an experiment, only our second time doing a Facebook Live, first time having you on board. I think this is something we're going to want to do again next week. We'll get better at it. But until then, let's remind everyone about the regular daily podcast for next week too.
Oh my God, we got some great stuff next week. We have Monica Klausner, who is the co-founder of Vistro, which is a plant-based protein meal delivery, and it's awesome. She talks about kind of transitioning into an entrepreneur and starting that really ambitious career. So it's definitely one to tune into. That's Monday. We have David Covey coming in and talking about his book about overcoming the 7 hidden obstacles to success. It's a very interesting book too. He kind of does it through a fairy tale and it's really different. Matt Kincaid, Permission to Speak Freely, which kind of goes back to what we were talking about. He talks all about creating a culture of honesty so that your team can actually give you the feedback that you need, that you know is true. And Rachel O'Meara, the author of Pause, Giving Yourself a Break, which I think everyone could stand to do. She works at Google and she talks about kind of going through a bit of a burnout and kind of learning how to take those moments for herself and stay healthy. So it's really going to be a great week, actually.
Yeah, all the guests, it was interesting conversations. I'm always interested in companies like Google or others that, you know, high success to kind of get an inside peek. And it is amazing that she tells a story about she wasn't really feeling it in her job and she got some tough feedback from her manager at Google, but they allowed her to take a little break, like a mini sabbatical, and she figured out, you know, how to come back into a new role and thrive and, you know, gives tips for how we can do that too.
True. Yeah. Google is where I find a lot of the career tips for the daily newsletters too. They have great productivity hacks and stuff. So no, it's a great company and it's a great interview.
That's great. Final reminder, hey, go out there to leadx.org/Branson for that cool ebook. And remember, this is my normal message. Leadership is not a choice because leadership is influence. We're influencing all of the time. So as you go into the weekend, think about how can you influence your kids, your spouse, your neighbors, the players on the Little League team or the soccer team or whatever it is. It's so important to be mindful about it because, again, our emotions are contagious to all of us. So thanks for joining. Thanks, Tara. Until next week. And just remember, be intentional. How will you lead those around you this weekend?